He had polio when he was 5 years old, and it left him, you know, crippled.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, he could walk and work, you know, all his life he worked. But he died about 10 years ago, I think it was now, yeah. And
the date is 1 August 1987, and I'm going to be interviewing George Edwin, the long-term resident of Moorhead. He and I are gathered on his porch of his fine summer home on Lake Pelican, and we're going to be visiting about his years in Moorhead. First of all, George, I'd like to ask you something about your parents. Your father, I understand, came from Sweden.
Okay, you want me to start?
Yeah, sure.
My father came from Sweden when he was 19 years old. And he had a sister in Graceville, Minnesota, who sent him a ticket that cost $50. And it covered the whole fare from Sweden to...
Graceville?
No. She landed in Morris, Minnesota.
Okay.
And his sister had this farm they proved up on, and they went to get him.
What do you mean by proved up on? Is that homesteading?
Homesteading.
Okay, so they satisfied their...
Yeah, homesteading.
Yeah.
And then they went to get my dad, and he stayed probably on the farm 2-3 months. And then he went to Moorhead, Minnesota, and he got a job with a tailor there by the name of Freeman.
Okay. And let me interrupt here, George. What year would that have been that he came from Morris?
Oh, yeah, I have to get that in there. It was 1892.
Okay.
He came 1892, and then he got this job with Freeman, and he worked for him until 1895, and Freeman decided to go into the insurance business. So it left my dad alone in the business, and then the insurance business didn't work out too well, and Freeman came back, and he wanted to get back with my dad in the business, and my dad says, no, I'm doing pretty good by myself.
Okay.
So from then on, he was on his own. So he had been in America 3 years, and he had his own business inside of 3 years.
Yes, sir. Had he been a tailor in Sweden?
Oh, he learned to trade in Sweden.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Do you know how? Had he worked with a tailor there?
Oh, yes. You see, in the old country, I'm sure most of the old-timers, they know this, when they had about 5 or 6 grades in school, they were confirmed, and then they had to go out and learn a trade. Mm-hmm. That was a procedure in the old country.
Yeah.
So he learned the trade, and when he came over here to America, of course, he was a tailor.
Sure.
And
do you have any idea what part of Sweden? Have you
Yes, Värmland.
Okay.
He was from Värmland, Sweden, and then I would say my dad was probably the leading tailor in Moorhead, Minnesota for, well, our business was until my brother and me, we joined in with my dad, and we were in business in all from 85 to 69, you could say 75 years we were in the tailoring business in the two cities.
That's impressive. Yeah.
75 years without any interruption or anything. Right. No, you know.
Okay.
And
now your mother came from where?
She came from Sweden, and she came from southern Sweden called Skåning.
Okay.
That's what they talk a language here. It's different than the rest of them a little bit. Anyways, that's what she came from. And she landed in Osage, Iowa. She had friends there, and she was a good cook and so on, and she did that kind of work until she married my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know other than to say that's and she had a job in the United States for $3 a week is what she made. And I have to interject this, and she saved her money, and she went back to Sweden and got her sister and her mother and her dad, and she had crossed the Atlantic Ocean 3 times before she was 21.
Isn't that something?
She's always told me that, and I'll never forget it.
No, that is, very special.
But I can't remember those dates. I suppose it was later than my dad, but I remember my dad's dates. Now, is this all?
Yeah.
And then,
let's stop here a minute. So both of your parents, both your mother and your father, had come from Sweden. When did they meet, or where? How did they happen to get together?
My mother was up in Moorhead visiting friends, and the Friedland brothers were good friends of my dad, and they introduced my mother to my dad, and they started going together, and I don't know just how long, but they eventually were married, and my dad went to Osage, Iowa. That's where my mother was living with her mother, and they were married down in Osage, Iowa.
Okay.
And I think the date would be about 1905.
Okay.
And then my dad, he came back to Moorhead, working at his trade, and he bought a real beautiful, nice home on 122 10th Street North in Moorhead with four big bedrooms and a living room and a den and a big kitchen and a pantry, all from a carpenter had built it for $2,500.
And it was that turn out to be your home then?
Yes, and that was the home that all of us were born in.
Okay.
And when I was born in 1911, September the 6th, and the a doctor who attended the birth of my brother and myself was Dr. Humphrey, which is an old timer in Moorhead. But I was born in the home. We did not go to the hospital. He just came to the home.
Right. Okay. And you had a twin brother. Twins were born in 1911.
Yes.
Okay.
And let's see, how can I go on from there? Well, then, of course, I'll always remember the streets in front of our house was nothing but mud, and the cars would get stuck. And we used to follow the ice wagon when we were kids to get little chunks of ice to chew on. And our feet would be all muddy and so on. But then they put in the streetcar tracks, and the streetcar used to go by our house up to the courthouse and also made a turn to the right, to the east, and went all the way to Dilworth. And sometimes us kids wanted to get a ride. We would get on the cowcatcher and ride all the way to Dilworth when we were kids to play basketball.
Oh, okay. Where was your school? Do you remember the name of it? Or?
Yes, I went to the Lincoln School in Moorhead through the eighth grade, and then we went to, after that, I went to the old high school on 8th Street, which they're fixing up now, and that's where I went to high school.
That must have been a rather new building at that time.
It was new, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I could say this, I played basketball with the Moorhead team, who won the state championship 2 years in a row, 1928 and 29. And they should have won it in 1930, but something happened where they didn't at the very end. And all the people down in Minneapolis, when we went to the Curtis Hotel, they all said, well, Morris should have won that 3 years in a row, but they didn't.
Now, who were your teammates in there, that you remember? Was Carol Melvey?
Shorty Melvey, Bliss Littler, Earl Moran, Pat Gilley, Hub Nelson, Johnny Walker.
Okay, those are some famous names.
Yeah.
When you were going to school then, basketball, that would be an after-school activity for you.
When
you have a chance. There was a places outside where you could play basketball. Anybody have some backboards up in their yard?
Yes, we had one behind the Cal Construction. He had a big backyard there, and we used to shoot baskets, and then we'd shoot the upsides, and we used to play back there all the time, pretty all winter.
Mm-hmm.
And we got so we, you know, could play pretty good.
Sure. Well, you must have state champs. When did you first start working in your father's business?
I started in my father's business after the war, because they were short of everything in those days, and business was very good. You could hardly buy a suit in the ready-made, and we were lucky. A fellow by the name of Ed Scarta had a tailor shop in Fargo, and he died, and he had bolts of cloth, which you could hardly buy, I would say 100 suits, And we went over there and we bought him out, and we just had a landslide business there for quite a few years.
Sure. Okay.
That's what happened then. And then...
Would you have started while you were in high school?
Oh, no, no, no. I was quite a bit later than that.
When you started?
My brother Frank was, but I started about a year after the war. I come out of the Army.
Okay.
And I had been in the Army for 2 years, and I had a misfortune in the Army. I broke my leg running the obstacle course, and I was in the hospital at Staunton, Virginia for 1 year.
Really?
Before I got out, and they released me, and when I got out of the hospital, I was wearing a cane, and I had that for 6 or 7 months after I got home.
Hmm. And this for someone who was as athletic as you had been in basketball and
yeah.
So forth, right? Well, when you came back a year after getting out of the Army, then you joined your father and your twin brother Frank. They were both in the business already.
Yes, oh yes.
Were there other employees? It was just the two of them?
No, we had another employee when we bought Outstarter by the name of Jimmy Johnson. And he was with us for a number of years before we discontinued the business. In 1969, the tailoring the business was just phasing out, and the old timers were dying away, and the young people weren't buying tailor-made suits.
Okay. Where was your father's shop? Do you remember, or did he have different locations in Morehead?
He had a number of different locations. The one we had the longest was behind the First National Bank of Morehead. And then we had, we were in there about 15 or 20 years, and then we decided that the bank was going to build a new building, so we decided to move to Fargo, and we were in the old Fargo Forum building for 15 years about. And then from, that's when we discontinued the business.
Okay. George, I'd like to ask this now, just if you could help me out. I don't understand much about the business. Let's say I was living in Morehead. I came into your shop. I wanted a suit. How would you start that process for me?
Well, when a customer would come in the shop, the first thing we'd do is he'd have to have a suit on, so we could take the measurements, and then we'd show him our fashion book, and he'd pick out the style he wants, and then we'd show him the material. We had bolts of cloth, and they would pick out from the bolts of cloth, and then if the man was kind of hard to fit, we always had fittings. We'd call the man up, and the suit would be about one-third done, and we just baste it here and there, and then we'd fit the man with just one third done, and then we'd continue on from there. And if we thought we didn't have anything right or just right, we would call him back and have another fitting. But that was a little unusual, but there are some fellas that would be real hard to fit, and when they were buying a tailor-made suit, they wanted it just so.
Right.
And
that process would take how long?
It takes a tailor approximately a week to make a suit. That's a three-piece suit, a vest and the pants and a coat. Mm-hmm. So you can figure on, in those days we worked all day Saturday, you can figure on to make a suit was about 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the prices really started to go up after the war. The cloth went up, and it was even hard to get material, and especially linings, and we always used nothing but silk thread, no synthetic or anything like that. And all the woolens we used to buy were all imported from either Scotland or England.
Mm-hmm. And how would they arrive? Did you order a number of bolts at a time, so you'd have a number of cloth?
Well, we always had a salesman who would come through from St. Paul. We had one from St. Paul and one from Chicago, and we usually would buy 25 or 30 bolts of cloth, so we would always have enough on hand so they could have a good selection.
Sure. A bolt would be enough for how many suits, right?
A bolt of cloth is usually 60 inches wide and 3.5 yards long.
Okay.
But it has to be 60 inches wide, and then we would shrink the cloth in muslin, and it usually would shrink about an inch a yard.
Oh, and these were typically all wool?
Oh yes, they were all wool. We didn't We had to work with all wool because when you're making a suit, a tailor has to do a lot of shaping with the iron. And if you had synthetics, you can't shape that at all.
No, right. Okay.
See? And that's the reason,
Was the major competition for your business then ready-to-wear, the stores that sold ready-to-wear suits, or were there other tailors?
In Moorhead there was two other tailors. Freeman was the other one, and I.O. Hansen was another one.
Okay.
But my dad seemed to always have the bulk of the business because I think he was the best tailor of all of
yes.
the three.
Okay.
Right. I'm not fooling there.
No. Did you get as good as he was, did you think?
No, I never did because you have to start real young. And to tell you what was really the best after the war years was we had a lot of alterations. And really, a tailor, we always did some alterations for the stores like the Hub Clothing. And then I got to do some from the Fargo people because of the scarcity of tailors. And really, to tell you the truth about alterations, you could really make more than you could sitting making a suit.
Oh, mm-hmm.
There was more money in it.
Yeah, it was a simpler kind of process.
Yes,
I suppose, too.
Yeah, and you didn't have to have all the skill either.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and that's what I did, a lot of that, because I was the junior one of the firm.
Yes, okay. Now, at the biggest, how many employees? I don't know if I asked that. It would be you, your brother, your father.
And Jimmy Johnson, okay. And then in the fall we always had another coat maker, and he would be in the shop for probably 3-4 months in the busy season.
Fall was the busy season.
Yes, always the fall from after Labor Day until Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Now suits would be a primary kind of product, but your top coats you would make, or
oh yeah, we made anything like a top coats and overcoats, and then suits we made the most of. But we made all three.
Would there be times when you'd make up garments for, let's say, a wedding party or something like that? Was that ever done? Or?
Well, I can tell you this, in the olden days, that's before I was in the business, my dad used to make suits for Reverend Ekman. And in those days, they didn't wear the robe that they do now. They had a cutaway. A coat with mm-hmm. with tails,
mm-hmm.
and they used to preach in that.
Okay, so that would be a special kind of.
Oh yes, that would be the special. And most ministers in those days they wore that. They didn't have these robes they have today.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Do you remember in the operation of the business? Did you have to do things like advertising? Did you have ads in the Forum or the Moorhead Daily News or?
Well, I'll tell you, we advertised very very little because we figured that of all the people who bought tailor-made clothes, there were probably only 2 or 3% mm-hmm. that bought a tailor-made suit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, they had to be men with means because our suits were much higher priced than that you get off the rack.
Did you ever have business from outside of Fargo Moorhead?
Oh yes, we had business from Bismarck and Minot and
okay. So the firm was really very well known then. You remember anything that was unique about work during the Depression, the 30s? Did the business drop off substantially then, or?
During the 30s, it was really tough. You were lucky if you could sell a suit. It was just not good at all, but we didn't have much competition in it. There was a few people there's always a few people that got enough money to be able to buy a good suit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was tough.
Mm-hmm. And that was true for different reasons during the war years then. You said that was tough doing business then. It was hard to get materials, I guess.
It was hard to get material, but there was plenty of business if we could get the material.
Yeah. Earlier you had said a lot of your material came from Scotland or England or wherever. Was that still true during World War II, for example?
Oh yes, yes it was. It was true. That was that was the best goods, and they have been in the business for hundreds of years, and they knew how to weave cloth and stuff much better than anybody in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, your father was in the business until when then? Did he?
He was in the business till 1950. He died.
Okay. Okay. And he was active right up until his...
Just about, within 6 months.
And you and your brother stayed on until 1969?
Right.
Okay. I want to ask about this now. In the way of doing business, did you feel it was important to make some associations? Did you belong to a service club or any organization in the community?
Yes. My brother, he was a Rotarian, and I was an Elk.
Okay.
And I've been an Elk, and I still am for 42 years.
42 years?
Yes.
Okay.
And my brother was a Rotarian, I would say, for 15, 20 years.
Right. And he was in the Moorhead Club, I imagine.
Yes, the Moorhead Club.
Okay. Was there something like Chamber of Commerce that was important to belong to, or Civic Club? I don't know if there was.
Well, we always belonged to the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
But outside of that, we didn't belong to anything else.
Well, it sounded like you were putting in 6 full days a week in business.
Yeah.
Yeah. George, I'd like to go back to talking about your mother and father who had come from Sweden. It's apparent that they brought some values with them that were important to you, that you learned from. How would you describe those values that they had? What was unique or special about what they'd learned in Sweden that...
Well, I can say this, that when I was brought up with Swedish parents, there's one thing that you learned, that you learn to behave, and you learn to be frugal. And they used to tell me often that you should be in the old country so you'd really learn what life is all about.
Okay.
Put that way. That happened many times.
Did they give you some examples of what life in the old country was like? That your dad tell about growing up or what?
Well, I can say this to my dad. He said this many times. He learned the trade in Sweden, and it took him 3.5 or 4 years, and he never saw 5 cents.
No money during all that
no
time.
Money.
He
no
did
money
it just for keeping.
There was the man there that he learned from, and you didn't get anything.
No.
He said, I never saw 5 cents. I remember that statement.
Yeah, yeah. And those were hard days, hard work, I'm sure.
They were tough, yes, yeah. They were.
So, to be frugal, to be, to make good use of resources, that would be a lesson that you had learned from them for sure.
You bet, yes.
And of course, those are traits that would stand well in business here. Can you remember at any point let me back up. Are there some unique business? What I'm trying to get at is, your typical customer would have been a man coming in for a suit or a top coat. You mentioned earlier the special project your father had for a clergyman. Were there other kinds of tailoring jobs, uniforms, or...?
Not too much in uniforms, because they were more of the cheaper, they didn't really want to have them all handmade, and they were more of the cheaper variety. But what my dad would do when it come to uniforms, I remember this now, he had a house where he could take all the measurements and send it in, and they were just the same as a factory-made suit. But then the thing that my dad had over anybody else who sold those uniforms was when the suit come back, lots of them don't fit.
Okay.
Well, that's where a tailor comes in.
Okay.
And he could say, now I can fit this suit, but another man in a store who's selling it, all he has is a salesmanship, and if it doesn't fit, he's stuck.
So he did handle, for special cases, some ready-wear then?
Well, yes. In a way, they were ready-wear.
Yeah.
You know, they were called a made to measure.
Right.
That's what they call. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Sure. Yes, the term.
Yeah, right. Made to measure.
And this would be for what? For
policemen and firemen. Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember when he had a whole slew, and he figured that was easy money because he didn't have to make the suit.
No. Yeah.
And he got a commission on each suit just like the store does when they sell. You know, they can stand there and... See, I sold 3 suits today, and it's wonderful, but we had to sit and make that suit.
Yes.
That's a different color.
Sure. Now, you remember if this was Moorhead Fire Department?
Yes, Moorhead and Moorhead Police Department.
Okay, both. Mm-hmm. Ed Lynn suits, or no, yeah. They had ready to measure, made to measure, made to measure suits.
And I can also say this, that the sheriff of Moorhead, Pete Malvey, and Bosco Brown, and O'Loughlin, and what was the other one? Jim Garrity, the city attorney. We had all the upper class and more, let's say, that that wanted nice clothes.
Okay. Pride in the Edlin suit.
Yeah.
And you mentioned going to a murder trial at the courthouse. Tell us about that.
Well, when I went to this murder trial, I could see how finely dressed Ben Rushness and Jim Garrity and Judge Wilson.
So you had the judge and two attorneys?
And two attorneys, and Ben Rustis was a good cousin. He's a clerk of court.
Right, okay.
For many, many years. You've heard of him, I'm sure.
Yes, sure.
Well, after being in Fargo for 15 years or more, in 66 and 67, it was harder to get woolens, and there were had some money synthetic materials out that it was just about impossible for Taylor to continue on in his business. And also the old clientele that we used to have, they were dying out, and the young people weren't buying suits, and Taylor never did get the amount he should have compared to other laborers like electricians and bricklayers and so on. So it was just a thing that we had to phase it out, and we went to Yuma, the wife and I, and we bought a lemon ranch in Yuma, Arizona, and we liked the climate there very much. So we just phased out our tailor shop. We sold the machines to the dry cleaners. You couldn't sell them to any tailors because there weren't any around. So that just ends the era of the tailoring business in Fargo and Moorhead, and also all the way to the West Coast.